from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum and our opening hour this morning, we begin with reaction and analysis of the speech delivered last night by President Barack Obama on Syria.
I determined it is in the national security interests of the United States to respond to the Assad regime's use of chemical weapons through a targeted military strike.
The president did put action on hold pending a possible diplomatic solution, and we'll discuss Syria from 9 to 9:30. Then at 9:30, we bring you the results of an investigation into elder abuse cases conducted by the Center for Investigative Reporting and KQED Radio, which revealed the dismissal and neglect of a host of cases by authorities in the state over the past decade. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. President Obama delivered a 15-minute primetime speech on Syria last night in which he held the Syrian regime of Bashar al-Assad accountable for the August 21st use of poison gas near Damascus. Though the president postponed bringing to a congressional vote his resolution to use military force to deter Syria from any further use of chemical weapons in their ongoing civil war in that country, he set forth his belief in the need for action against use of such weapons. And the administration appears to be considering, or at least taking into account, a proposal by Russia to drop a U.S. attack if Syria gives up its chemical weapons to international control.
I have therefore asked the leaders of Congress to postpone a vote to authorize the use of force while we pursue this diplomatic path.
In this opening Forum segment, we get reaction and analysis to the speech delivered last night on Syria by the president. Joining us is Indriya Lakshmanan, who is a foreign policy correspondent with Bloomberg News. Indriya, good to have you back on Forum. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
With us this morning from the nation's capital. With us from Arlington, Virginia, outside the nation's capital, is Josh Gerstein, senior White House reporter for Politico. And welcome, Josh Gerstein.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, glad to have you back with us. And let me begin with you, if I may. The president may have avoided really getting beaten up on this by Congress, or at least that's what the smart money is saying.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that he was going to have a lot of difficulty getting this use of force resolution that he had proposed through Congress. It was in a great deal of trouble in the House of Representatives and even seemed to be in some trouble in the Senate. And that was really illustrated by the speed with which lawmakers embraced this still, I think, rather shaky Russian proposal to try to resolve all this. There was just a real, almost desperate, palpable desire on the part of lawmakers to just not vote on this if there was some way to avoid it. And then this presented that opportunity, at least for the time being.
And Indriya, as Josh says, it is rather shaky, not only because diplomatic efforts were held up, according to the administration, mainly because of Russia, but we're talking about something here that is very complicated. A civil war is going on, and we're going to supposedly see Russia and Syria working together to make their weapons under control of international forces?
Right. I mean, it's a question at this point whether this is going to be the out that President Obama wanted. And if it works out, then, of course, everyone will say, oh, this was the wonderful diplomatic solution. But it could also be a way to drag this out for many more weeks. I mean, this all came out as a result of what seemed to be an inadvertent comment by John Kerry during a press conference in London earlier this week when he was asked by a reporter if there was anything at all that possibly could be done to avert a military strike at this juncture. And he said in a sort of offhand way, well, Syria could agree to put all of their chemical weapons under international control, but that's not going to happen. And within minutes, it seems, Russia had seized on that, and they were calling up John Kerry on his airplane on his way home from London, saying, you know, we'd like to give this a try. And the Syrian foreign minister said, yes, we're willing to do this. So the question now is whether Russia and Syria use this as a stalling tactic, or whether they're serious, and, you know, whether there's a negotiated way to do this in a way that brings consequences if they don't agree.
Yeah, Josh Gerstein, it almost seemed like a throwaway line by Secretary Kerry, who was apparently off script. And the result of this, at least at this point, is that the Obama administration is trying to essentially gain capital, saying, you know, our military strength in this matter and our resolution may have been what tipped the scales. Ironically, I suppose, and I'm saying ironically, Secretary Kerry was also talking about very limited, small, not even significant strike. That doesn't exactly sound like the sort of thing that would make Bashar al-Assad and the Russians quake.
Right. I mean, that was sort of another gaffe, if you will, or, you know, perhaps inadvertently inappropriate statement that Kerry made in the hours leading up to this speech yesterday. He used that phrase, I believe, unbelievably small, trying to stress for people that we were not talking about an Iraq-style or Afghanistan-style military engagement. But unbelievably small doesn't really sound too threatening, and also it undercut what the administration had been telling some of the more hawkish members up on Capitol Hill, like Senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham, which was that this strike would actually be pretty unpleasant for Assad and his regime, and actually could amount to a, you know, more severe military blow than the regime has suffered during the past 2 years or so of civil war. So the messages were sort of all over the place, as I say, in the day or two leading up to this speech.
Again, Josh Gerstein is senior White House reporter with Politico, and Indira Laxmanan is foreign policy correspondent with Bloomberg News. And I'm wondering at this point, Indira, if the president really made his case about national security. He said our allies are threatened, this will embolden Iran. He also mentioned U.S. exceptionalism, which is something that the right has said he has not used or has not alluded to, but he alluded to it specifically in terms of children being killed and the wanton deaths as a result of this carnage. And perhaps, I need to add here, didn't necessarily in many people's mind make the case that it was incontrovertibly done by Assad.
Well, it's interesting you bring it up because he did make that case for American exceptionalism. And I was thinking to myself of some neoconservative foreign policy analysts and writers in Washington who were probably rubbing their hands in front of their television sets as he said that. I mean, don't forget, though, he made an allusion to World War II. And I noticed that in the immediate aftermath of him saying that, that people, some foreign policy people were already tweeting out saying, ah, but don't forget that FDR didn't go into World War II until Pearl Harbor was attacked. He never went in just because of the Nazis. So it's an interesting thing. I mean, the CNN poll that we saw immediately after the speech found that 61% of Americans favor the approach that the president has taken, but only 47% of them felt that the president had actually made the case for military action. And a majority did not think that it was in the national interest of the United States to be involved in the conflict in Syria. So it's a difficult line that he's walking. He's trying to make the case. Chemical weapons are different from conventional weapons. We don't want to tip the balance in favor of one side or another in an internal civil war, but at the same time, we can't let weapons of mass destruction and chemical weapons that kill children, you know, indiscriminately to be used. So he tried to make his case, and he tried to do it in a sober pitch without emotionalism. It seems people are pretty divided on whether that is a good case that he made.
Well, the case particularly was, let me just follow this up with a question about making the case that August 21st, Bashar al-Assad was specifically culpable for what happened to men, women, and children as a result of poison weapon, chemical weapons. He could have laid out more proof. He could have used visual images. He could have used, and many are saying, could have declassified interceptions that were made. Why do you suppose that wasn't done? I mean, in the name of national security or what?
Well, he did remember the White House has posted a declassified version of their intelligence, and they've said that it's the most that they can give publicly. And they've urged people, every adult American and every member of Congress, to watch the publicly available YouTube video showing the victims. So what they have said is that they have intercepts showing that at the highest levels, the Syrian regime was aware of and checking on this gas attack. What they have not proven incontrovertibly to the public is that Assad himself knew, but their argument is that he's in charge of the regime, so if his top people are doing it, then the buck stops with him.
Well, on the political side, Josh Gerstein, you had Rand Paul giving a response, curious in itself, but also saying, yes, Assad is to blame, he deserves to die, but President Obama ought to simply leave this alone. And he mentioned, you know, al-Qaeda being sort of supported by President Obama, indeed, if he's in opposition to Bashar al-Assad.
Right, and that's one of the arguments you've been hearing from some conservatives who want to stay out of this, some Republicans who want to stay out of this, say, you know, we have to be very careful, not only with this possible military action, but even our support for the Syrian rebels. You've heard this phrase that was put out that, you know, we don't want to act as Al-Qaeda's air force. There are disputes between the administration and Republicans on Capitol Hill, some Republicans, about, you know, just how much of Assad's opposition is made up of radical Islamists linked to Al-Qaeda, especially Al-Qaeda in Iraq. The administration says it's a significant percentage of the people that are fighting, but by no means a majority. Some people on the Hill claim that it is, and it's just very hard to make sense of those numbers. I do know that a lot of Syrian Americans that are following the conflict insist that most of the opposition is, in fact, moderate, is not affiliated with extremist elements, but that's one of the arguments that you've seen from the isolationist camp, or at least those who don't think the U.S. should be stepping into this conflict any further than it has.
We're talking, by the way, to Josh Gerstein, who is senior White House reporter for Politico, and Indira Lakshmanan, who is foreign policy correspondent for Bloomberg News, about President Obama's speech last night to the nation, televised speech, prime time, 15 minutes talking about Syria. And you may want to talk about Syria or the president's speech. Did you see it? Did you hear it? And what were your responses? And what do you think in the wake of it, particularly in light of this diplomatic possibility that has come about as a result of, well, as I said, a throwaway line from Secretary of State Kerry that was picked up by Vladimir Putin and the Russians. Our toll-free number is available if you'd like to join the conversation. We do welcome you. It's 866-733-6786. And if you'd like to join the conversation, please do so now. It's a half-hour segment, so make your voice heard. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have immediately onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I want to go right to your calls. Let me go first to an email from a listener who says, how could the United States and the UN possibly trust the Assad regime to turn over the entire extent of their chemical weapons stockpiles? Even a significantly diminished stockpile can still inflict genocide. It seems that this proposed diplomatic approach will help the Assad regime wash its hands of its heinous crimes against humanity while doing little to secure the safety of Syrians and their neighbors. Fair point, Indira Lakshmanan, I think, isn't it?
It's an excellent point, and it's interesting that Assad's regime has not even admitted until yesterday that it had any kind of a chemical weapons stockpile, even though what they have is estimated to be the third largest chemical weapons stockpile in the world.
And excuse me, much of it provided by the Russians, we should add.
Right. And remember, this, I mean, really, Syria is one of only a handful of countries in the world that hasn't signed on to the Chemical Weapons Convention of 1997. But there's a lot of practical questions involved. Even if this were done in completely good faith, even if it weren't just a stalling tactic, the nuts and bolts of actually getting rid of a chemical weapons stockpile are complicated. The U.S. signed on to that Chemical Weapons Convention in 97, and in 15 years has not been able to eliminate its entire stockpile, has only eliminated 90%. So, you know, there are also difficult questions of how do you go about doing this. It would not be easy, and the very first thing you would need is a ceasefire. You need a halt in fighting to be able to safely move out chemical weapons.
And some of those weapons, let's face it, may have been moved to different places. And with the time that has elapsed, for example, since the congressional resolution was put forward. Let me read a listener comment on our website. It says, the Russian proposal is the best thing that could have happened. It may have averted a terrible war that may have led to the death of civilians as well as the attack on Syria, may have led to regional or even global wars. However, the Syrian problem still remains and must be solved as soon as possible. Otherwise, the violence and instability will continue and may spread to the entire region. And we asked our listeners on Facebook what they thought of the president's speech last night. Let me read some responses. Kimberly says, it was the clearest explanation yet of his logic. Still, I'm hoping that Russia's diplomacy can convince Assad to give up his arsenal of chemical weapons. Al writes, I didn't buy his daisy chain logic about how allowing the dictator to use chemical weapons emboldens another to use chemical weapons, which emboldens a third who attacks us. That is not a clear and present danger in my book. I don't know of anyone who thinks that Assad shouldn't be stopped from gassing his own people, but Obama never addresses why the UN isn't the agency to tackle this. Why is it always up to us? Well, actually, in all fairness, the president said he knew that it would be blocked by the Security Council veto of the Russians and the Chinese. John says, in reaction to the speech last night, one word, Darfur. And a comment from Marty that we've received a lot of comments like this. I think he laid out some very valid points. It didn't change my mind. We absolutely should not strike Syria. One thing I still want answered, why are the 100,000 Syrians killed by conventional means less valuable than the 1,400 killed by chemical means? Let me bring our callers onto this, and let's begin with Jonathan. Jonathan, welcome.
Hi there. Thanks. please bear with me. I've never called in before, and I'm a real dilettante talking on the radio.
Glad to have you, dilettante or not. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay, thank you. At the outset of Obama's comments and his direction on this, I was very surprised at how contradictory it was to his being granted the Nobel Peace Prize for that very global approach to governance. And this just seems to call into real stark relief that switch in position, and really disappointing. That's sort of my first comment, and I'll just leave with my last one, which is the argument for national security and our safety. It just seems to be a very subjective argument, and the text comment that you received ago about the daisy chain effect, I guess I'd have to say I agree. At some point, we need to accept a little bit of risk to our own country to avoid being involved endlessly around the globe.
Well, I thank you for the call, and call again, Jonathan. I'm glad you decided to call for the first time. But Joel Gerstein, what does it do? I mean, the president said to my friends on the left, to my friends on the right, but there has been a shift here, particularly, I think, from the viewpoint of those on the left, from a president who was a candidate against war and who, as he said, has now led us out of Afghanistan and out of Iraq in terms of boots on the ground and promised no more boots on the ground, but is being seen now as possibly wanting to have military action that could lead to war.
Well, you know, I would say that the president is by no means a pacifist. I think everybody would have to stipulate to that. He has wound down the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're basically withdrawn from Iraq and are withdrawing from Afghanistan. But remember, we've had a extremely aggressive drone campaign in Pakistan and Somalia, Yemen, and other places that has been carried out. That's a bit harder to get video of, and we don't always see the civilian casualties that are involved. So he is not someone that has shied from using force. This is always a little bit of a different situation here, though, with the Syrians, because we're not talking, as the president conceded, about an imminent threat to U.S. national security, but more about an international norm, and to be honest, a humanitarian reason for intervention. And this has been sort of a divide and a tension in Obama's foreign policy, I think, from the time he came in. You know, he had people with him, like Samantha Power, who sort of made her name exploring the, you know, moral ambiguity of and arguably the moral failure of the U.S. policy towards Rwanda in the 1990s. And so he has surrounded himself with some people like that who do believe that under certain circumstances the world should act to prevent that kind of a tragedy, and perhaps that if the world won't act, the U.S. may have to act. And I think we're seeing that play out in this Syrian context.
Well, his case last night was made on a humanitarian basis, but it was also made on, well, Indira Lakshman, on the idea that a red line had been crossed and that it was in the world's best interest to do something about averting or deterring the use of chemical weaponry. Nevertheless, when you examine the president's speech and hold it up to the light of day, you recognize that it's really also sending a message to Iran, and a message that they should not necessarily continue their nuclear buildup, isn't it?
Absolutely. And while he didn't utter the words Iran and North Korea, he did talk about states taking messages from what we mean by red lines. And there's no question that that's an underlying point of what he was trying to talk about when he said national security and what your listener referred to as a daisy chain. I mean, I want to echo what Josh said, that just because you win the Nobel Peace Prize doesn't mean that you think that military action is never justified in any situation. I think you'd be hard pressed to find any American politician who would say that it was wrong to act in World War II against Hitler, or that, you know, we shouldn't have done more or sooner or something with Bosnia, Rwanda, Darfur, etc. So, you know, this whole notion of responsibility to protect, it's not when we talk about people think from the left think he's being right wing. Well, no, this is actually something you see in the liberal wing of the Democratic Party, this notion of military action for humanitarian reasons. And he did make clear that the UN Security Council has been paralyzed, held hostage to the veto that Russia has, and Russia has really shielded Syria and Assad with its veto power. I mean, as to this question of a message of Iran, remember the other place where Obama has clearly repeatedly used the word red line is that he would not accept a nuclear-armed Iran. So Iran says, no, we're just doing nuclear power. We're not doing a nuclear bomb. I'd have to say that the world powers don't believe that. They believe they have evidence that Iran is secretly trying to become nuclear weapon capable. And so when a red line is set, if the U.S. doesn't back it up, there's the fear that not only will Iran go forward, but that Israel might go forward with its own military unilateral action against Iran because they don't trust that America has its back and that America is willing to do something to stop an Iran with a nuclear bomb.
And Iran, I mean, Israel also has nuclear weapons, so we should mention that should not be forgotten in this whole mix.
Right, although there hasn't been the worry that they were going to use it against someone, whereas the U.S. administration in Israel fear that Iran might use their weapon or have it as a deterrent, perhaps. Maybe that's the same notion.
And let's bring Claire into this discussion. Claire, welcome.
Thank you. I think part of the dilemma is we want to stand against this chemical weaponry that's being used against civilians, but at the same time not show that we're against the Muslim world by entering in militarily again to the Middle East. And I'm wondering if we can stand with the Arab League of Nations with this, and I'm wondering where they're standing with this and if they intend on taking any action.
That's a good point. Indira Lakshman, on the Arab League has essentially said that it's wrong what Assad did, that they think something should be done. But like just about every other country in the world who has said the same thing, they're not ready to take any action, I don't believe.
Well, I can tell you, this just came out minutes ago, a reporter who's with the Arab League in Cairo, and the Arab League Council just came out saying that it hopes the Russian initiative on Syria will lead to results that will realize the will of the Syrian people, and the Arab League called on the Security Council and the international community to work on bringing Syrian chemical weapons under international control. But remember, until now, the Arab League has been supportive of the U.S. taking a lead to do something to stand up against the use of chemical weapons. So we'll see where it goes from here, obviously.
Yeah, thank you for updating us on that. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the call from you, Claire. And I want to get another caller on, and that's Laurent. Good morning. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was just going to say that from the spiritual point of view, you know, Meir Baba says that a person can or a nation can intervene, a stronger nation, when somebody is an aggressor like this with anybody. The fact that it's a civil war does complicate things, but if you take all the politics aside, there is the right thing to do here, and I know it's hard, but I just want to encourage President Obama and the American people to see that. You have to step in sometimes, even though there's politics.
All right. I thank you for that. I didn't know that Meir Baba figured in the whole calculus of whether or not the United States should intervene militarily. Let me get Ruth on. Ruth, you're on.
Hi. I was hearing from a reporter from the BBC last night, and he said, is Obama sending a message saying to dictators, if you want to kill your own people, just don't use chemical weapons? So I was just wondering, should all this focus on the chemical weapons be the way it is? And should there be more focus on just clarifying what is going on in Syria?
Well, you know, this has been raised by a number of listeners. Jess Gerstein, I want to get a quick response from you how this plays out politically, because 100,000 people have died in Syria, a couple million refugees. And somehow all the focus on chemical weapons from some people's standpoint takes it away from that.
Right. And I think, it reminds me of the debate between war versus torture, for example. We go very strongly after people that torture, but killing in war we countenance, and I do think there are some international norms, and chemical weapons falls into that category of something that we've always treated as beyond the pale.
We'll have to leave it there. Jess Gerstein, I thank you from Politico, and Indira Lakshmanan from Bloomberg News, thank you. And another segment of Forum is coming up. We're going to talk about some shocking things having to do with elder care. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.